George Steiner wrote that when the critic looks behind him, he sees a eunuch's shadow. Cynics might add, and alongside that, the shadow of the aggrieved artist who is about to stab him, or indeed her. But is it really the case that those who can't critique? Or is there a much more complex dynamic to the critic's role that it takes? And yes, I'm talking metaphorically here, real bulls to call off. Here to propose the motion is Mike McShane, a comedian and actor who's currently playing a flesh-eating plant. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he deals with people who disagree with him. alongside him is Nick Hackworth, who's not quite able to shake his reviewing habits since he still deputises for Brian Sewell on the Evening Standard, but he's also currently reinventing himself as a curator. Opposing the motion is Nicholas de Jong, the Evening Standard theatre critic whose reputation is so fearsome that he's been nicknamed Nicholas de Don Corleone by one satirical publication. And alongside him is Sarah Kent, a former art editor of Time Out, whose achievements include championing artists like Damien Hirst and Tracy Emin in their early careers, but who was also once, this is true, you were almost strangled as a private view by a man to whom you gave a bad view about 10 years
before. 10 years before that, yes. This look of pain and horror came across. He'd been smiling at me, you know, a minute before. And then suddenly when he realised who I was, he really did want to murder me.
Well, Mike, would you like to kind of pick up on that theme? Do you want to start the attack on critics?
Oh, choking them? No, not necessarily. sure. Well, critics are parasites and critics are eunuchs. I believe this is a true statement because critics, by the nature, are journalists who work primarily for the scoop. Their work's dependent on others' material solely. They have no purpose without the production in front of what they do. They have nothing to write about unless a play exists. Even in previews, they exist solely to push the play into production and into the popular audience. Two, they cover a large field of endeavor in a very short time. They're wide, not deep. It's about quantity, not the quality of the review. Three, they introduce irritating and often harmful material into their hosts, like a parasite, causing inflammation and, in some cases, artistic death. the critics are eunuchs, and they must remain eunuchs as an impotent force for the artist, for art to thrive in action. Any artist that looks over their shoulder about what a critic is thinking has basically cut off their own balls in the first move. You have to operate freely and independently of your concern about what somebody who's basically a journalist or reporter has got to say about you. Because if you have a relationship with a critic, if they're a fan or if they're a peer, it always turns into a bad romance. Somewhere along the line, they're going to go, "You've changed and I don't understand you anymore." And then you have to turn to the critic and go, "Maybe we should be seeing other theaters." the critic's job is to disseminate gossip and opinion and to be an advocate for the audience. In essence, to primp and preen and to stand by their fans, which traditionally is what a eunuch does. A critic who wants to be a playwright is like a eunuch with a strap on. He may bring you pleasure or pain, but ultimately it's to fulfill their sterile fantasy. So if not a journalist, if not an artist in their own right, if not an essential generative force, then what is a critic? They are a form of monster, a creation unable to create, cobbled together for purposes of newspaper sales. They're a golem with a daily tucked into their cavity, drinking all the free white wine and slapping the muses on the ass.
Nicholas, how do you answer to being responsible for various artistic deaths?
I'm not going to go into that at all. I sit before you as a parasexual therapist and a catharsis worker. You may be surprised by my definition of myself, but I will explain it. Parasite, I mean, let's look at this weird debate, or rather weird words used. Parasite, one who eats at the table or at the expense of another, one admitted to the feast after the sacrifice, an animal or plant which lives in or upon another organism and draws its nutriment directly from it. The idea of my drawing nutriment from even David Hare is repellent to me. Or the eunuch, a castrated male person, such a person employed in as a harem attendant. The definition has to do with removal of testicles, but to be honest, you still can get it up. And to be honest, if you look at those two words, I think we get the idea of our surviving through feeding off the experience of theatre. And I was taken by the words of John Helpan or some such critic writing about David Hare, who referred to eunuchs in a whorehouse. And it struck me that the theatre world is indeed a whorehouse, and critics are part of that whorehouse, but in a particular way, and I would say it's a quasi-sexual way. Because look at our reviews, and you will be struck, or you should be struck, by something rather suspicious about them. And that is the degree of ecstasy and overwhelmness and of utter bliss that is suggested by the reviews. It's summed up by my favorite display advertisement I've ever seen, An Evening of Unalloyed Pleasure, which came out as An Evening of Unallowed Pleasure. What I feel basically, though, that the critics, ever since Aristotle defined the idea of catharsis as the purging of the emotions, have worked responsively and responsibly in a quasi-sexual way. That is to say, the entire experience of theatre, whether it is comic or tragic, has an orgasmic element to it, both in an intellectual and emotional sense. And that orgasm is only achieved through often the unlocking of the play's code, the understanding, the illumination, how it works, what it does, and how it does it. And let us face it, if you look back on theatrical history, to take any example from Ghosts to Harold Pinter's The Birthday Party, you are faced with people bemused, unable to get their orgasm, which is achieved through the understanding and illumination of the author's intent. The critic offers you a series of modes of unlocking the mystery, to enable you to understand and therefore achieve your orgasm. And that, every morning, evening, or every week, is what the theatre critic offers to those who haven't yet had the experience. An illumination, an understanding leading to the orgasm. So often, leaving small theatres, one gets the vital clue. Thank you for coming, they say. I rest my case.
Nick, has another critic ever helped you reach orgasm?
I'm not going to tell you. After that orgasmic speech from Nicholas, I think I'm hard-pressed to follow, but I will give it a go. Rachel helpfully pointed out that the speakers who did best in these three-minute speeches stuck to three bullet points, so I'll give you mine up front. The first one is, I'm a critic. The second one, critics are parasites. The third, QED, I am a parasite. So I'm not sure what I'm doing on this side of the table, other than there was no one else who would argue the case with Mike. But I will try. Initially, when Rachel asked me to do this, I was, of course, somewhat offended, being a critic and saying, would I propose this? And I thought perhaps she was singling me out as being particularly parasitic. I was even more offended when she said there was no fee. But then I thought about it a little, and a very strange feeling came across me, one of self-honesty. And I looked back at my short career in art criticism, and I thought, it's true. For 7 years, I have been a parasite, sucking the intellectual blood from young artists all across London, and that instead of paying for therapy, I could perhaps come here, talk to this extensive audience, and unburden myself. And it's undoubtedly true that I am a parasite, and all critics are, but, and I'm afraid I'm going to be extremely parasitic and feed on my colleague here by stabbing him in the back and playing something of a Trojan horse, I would argue that not only are critics parasites, but artists are parasites too. In fact, somewhat worse. And to prove that, I have an article on parasites from Wikipedia, so it must be true. And I'm very quickly going to go through a few examples of parasites, and we'll see if we can link them to the role of the critic and the role of the artist. First of all, as a general advert for being a parasite in general, parasitism, Parasitism, according to this definition, is one version of symbiosis, living together, anyone has a means of knowledge, a phenomenon in which two organisms are phylogenetically unrelated, coexist over a prolonged period of time, usually their entire life. And if you think about the poor critic, particularly the art critic such as myself or Sarah, and think about the organisms who we have to be in prolonged contact with, usually over our entire careers, people like Tracy Emin or Damien Hirst or Chapman Brothers, then I'm sure you will feel pity for us. But if a critic is a parasite, what kind of parasite are they? There's an endoparasite, that's someone who lives inside their host, an ectoparasite, like a mite on the back of a cow, or, and I think this is probably the best candidate, an epiparasite, is a parasite that feeds on another parasite, which leads us to the artist. So, if the artist is a parasite, what kind of parasite are they? And here, on page 2, fortunately, I have the answer. It's a biotrophic parasite, and a biotrophic parasite is one who lives within their host, feeds on their nutritional benefit, but must keep them alive, otherwise they must die. Who are they keeping alive? Wealthy people. We feed on them. I'm going to stop there. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Sarah, how do you hit back at that?
Well, I'm glad I'm speaking last because Rachel asked, as we've understood, that we should speak in clear, precise bullet points and that we have to, you know, hit hard. And I very quickly realised that I couldn't do that because every argument I came up with a counter-argument. So I'm going to muddy the water totally by kind of arguing both ways at once, really. Yes, I think critics are without doubt parasites, and that criticism is a secondary discipline. There's no doubt about that. That, you know, critics couldn't exist if artists didn't exist, or actors, or theatre people writing plays, and so on. But that, as Nick has pointed out, artists are themselves parasites. They're parasites, I would say, on art history. In fact, parasites on one another. So. But having said that, there are good critics and there are bad critics. I think bad critics, and there are an awful lot of them in the art world, are people who actually think that criticism is a primary role, that has a primary purpose, it's a primary discipline. And they use artists as examples of some thesis that they want to put forward. And so they literally illustrate the points they want to make with works of art. And I really despise people who do that. So we'll tear them up. This is an artwork, by the way. I've now become, having just resigned as an art critic, I'm now an artist. That's how you make plays. That's how you write plays. And we're in a theatre. Barnett Newman very famously said that criticism is to artists what ornithology is to birds. And it's isn't it wonderful? I had to quote that, although it's, you know, completely undercuts my argument. But I would argue that even artists who think they don't need critics actually do, because nobody works in a void. They work in a context. And it seems to me that the function of a critic is to create that context for them, to create a context that is that allows them to work in a fruitful and useful way, but also allows their work to be received intelligently. So you're... And when I started writing, it was in the 70s, there was an unbelievably hostile atmosphere in this country to contemporary art. So I saw it as my role to alter that and to create a context in which artists could function. So I saw myself as a spokesperson for artists, explaining them to the, you know, people like you, the morass of the great unwashed who were, you know, sitting there suspicious and hostile and glum and, you know, knowing that they really hated art. And I had some wonderful experiences. I used to teach in an adult institute and had people came after work and I was talking about contemporary art and had people who came because they hated contemporary art with a great passion and they came to have their prejudices confirmed. And so I had a wonderful time converting them. It was great. So Whether I'm going to convert you to anything or not, I don't know. But I want to read you a piece by Harold Rosenberg. He wrote it in 1952. Now, he's an American critic, writing at the time of the abstract expressionists. Now, New York was very hostile to contemporary art at the time. These artists were working in a complete void, really. They only had each other. And he wrote this wonderful piece of prose, and there is no way that you can't kind of sigh when you hear this and wish you'd written it, basically. So this is his explanation of what abstract expressionism is. The canvas began to appear to one American painter after another, he said, as an arena in which to act rather than a space in which to reproduce, redesign, analyze, or express an object. What was to go on the canvas was not a picture but an event. I mean, you feel like cheering and waving a flag. It's real rousing stuff. Now, I can't pretend that in my 30 years of writing I've ever written anything comparable to that. But I did point out in 1985, when Charles Saatchi opened his gallery, his first gallery in St. John's Wood, I did say it would be a good thing if he bought more British art. And I like to think that that did influence him. So, one of the reasons why I've given up being a critic is because, as Nick has pointed out, really, I think artists now have become parasitic. I think the climate in this country has changed to such an extent that all critics can do is sort of sit on the sidelines and politely comment while money rules. So artists' reputations mushroom, sales escalate, everybody becomes millionaires except for us. We sit on the sidelines, remaining poor, watching it all happen, and wondering why.